All right, welcome back everyone to the Cancel for Maintenance podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're a show that takes a behind-the-scenes look into the gritty, non-glamorous life of aircraft maintenance. We share some laughs, impart some wisdom, all in hopes of giving you that split seconds relief in your day that can hopefully prevent a mishap. I am your co-host, Six.
I'm MBP.
And our third host, Shoreline, is silently in the back, monitoring our audio, making sure our faces stay fit for radio. So today's going to be kind of more of a bonus episode again. I mean, we're doing a lot of bonuses, but I think a lot of it's mostly because we don't really have a whole lot of knowledge going into it. So we're really just giving like our opinions, so to speak.
Well, I think we've had a lot of interactions with a lot of different people over the last few weeks. So it's like an amalgamation of all the stories and stuff that people have shared with us that we're like, oh man, we got to relay this out, you know?
This is true. And one of the recurring ones we've been hearing about, besides counterfeit parts, is like stuff we would hear from the scrapyard, like scrapyard stories. And this kind of triggered a core memory of mine, flashing back to my times in the service where there were moments where I have to rob parts from static display pieces, like ones that have just been stuck out there and they're more like giant paperweights, really. And I'm robbing parts off this thing to go stick it in another plane that's in a museum somewhere, you know, because it's like the weather finally got to it or somebody's kid got a little too curious with their hands and broke something. So here I am. Like one example is this was in Hawaii. There was a helicopter as a kind of like a training tool. Like it was just like a tube, really. With some makeshift seats that people run in, they sit down and they pretend to be evacuating from this thing. And we got tasked out by this one museum that somehow reached out to us and say, hey, can you guys cut like 4 feet of the floor? Like, what? Yeah, can you guys just cut 4 feet of the floor and bring it to us? I'm like, why? You know, so but here we are, right? They gave us the authority, we had all the paperwork to say that's good to go, and there we were with a reciprocating saw and some crowbars that we're cutting a 4 foot square out of the floor of this static trainer thing so they can slap it onto another helicopter in a museum. It was one of the weirdest things I've ever been asked to do, but I'm like, well, whatever man, you if it's cool, it's kosher, we'll do it. Screw it. Right. I mean, to be fair, that's probably not one of my not so great scrapyard stuff, but it's definitely up there. Like, this was an odd request. But some of the other ones that we were told, MVP, if you can really elaborate on this, some of it I didn't believe was even a thing.
Yeah. I learned a lot. So last week, I had some one friend and former coworker. They were in town for work, used to work with them in the space industry, and they still work in the space industry, building, some cutting edge technology, futuristic stuff. These guys are, some of the most intelligent individuals I've ever, had the pleasure of knowing and working with in my life. So always great to see them and smoke and joke a little bit. Well, one of them brought their girlfriend along and, She has only worked in the aerospace industry for 2 years, and the entirety of her career has been in a scrapyard or a boneyard or whatever you want to call it. And she's doing the job of about 10 people. She's being a maintainer. She's being the manager. She's running supply shipping. And I'm talking like sending parts to all over the world to towns and cities you've never heard of in far off backwater worlds, you know. it was anyway, so talking to, you know, listening to her regale about some of her experiences so far, and she says, you see a lot of interesting things. There's always companies coming out there, whether it's big name companies, and they're coming out there and they're scanning their competitors' aircraft. They got these big elaborate scanners and they're scanning entire airframes and they're learning off of one another. And that's how they're competing. And then you'll have somebody come out and say, hey, I need the vertical tail off that 747 for, I have a broke 747 sitting in Buenos Aires and we need the vertical off of that. It's going to take me a while to get that 80 foot tail. off of there. No, you can send it to us in pieces, three pieces. So it's in smaller shipping crates.
What?
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 Yeah, and they'll send them drawings and everything else to include, you know, drilling out rivets, plasma torches, and saw and reciprocating saws to get these things into smaller pieces to be fit in smaller boxes so they can ship them down to Buenos Aires to put them all back together, stab them on the back of a 747 and fly it. Like, wow. Wild stuff. There was one there. People were coming out there like scabbing parts for engines. There was one story she mentioned where these very small Middle Eastern airlines that only exist during Ramadan, like they don't fly any other time of the year other than Ramadan. And what they'll do is they'll come out here and they'll find two aircraft that are barely have any service life left in them. I'm talking less than, you know, 50 hours. And that's probably even erring to the high side. They'll come over and even they might even have timed out parts on them, and they'll buy these aircraft and they'll say, hey, hollow them out. So they'll rip out all the interiors if there are interiors, and they'll come in, they'll bring a crew. They'll barely get this thing started. They sign all this release of liability paperwork. So the boneyard's like, hey, you know that you're buying a non-airworthy aircraft. And you might be saying, well, how are they flying it out of there? Well, learning from this lady, you can get a permit for pretty much anything. And she says her claim to fame is she calls herself the permit master or the ferry master, because she gets so many different one-time use approvals from the FAA and all that stuff. Anyways, these small companies, they'll buy these things. They'll sign these release of liabilities, basically saying, once it's in your hands, anything that happens over U.S. soil is your responsibility. You'll have to pay for. So that's asset, that's damage to fields, crops, homes, loss of life. All that's yours. Once it's not over U.S. territory, it's not our problem anymore. And anything that happens to it is your problem. We're not held responsible. So they'll take these things. They'll barely get these hoopties running, and they'll fly them. What? And they'll take them back. They fly one to Mecca, and then they'll take another one and fly it to these impoverished Muslim countries. And I'm not, for all you listening, I'm not dogging on Muslim countries. This is just one example she had. But they will go around to all these different countries, and they'll pick up people, and they'll load them in there and pack them as tightly as they can. That's women, children, live animals, firewood, food, whatever these people have, and it's not much. And they'll load them in there, and they fly them to Mecca. And the story is that, you know, they have open flames in the back of these tubes that they're flying in, and everybody's just sitting on a metal floor, and they're slaughtering animals and cooking them inside the aircraft. And they fly it to Mecca, land it. Everybody gets off and does what their right is. You know, they go to Mecca and all that stuff, but that plane's then timed out, and they just leave it there in the desert sands. And the locals will scrap it down themselves and use parts and pieces and whatever to build home structures, you name it.
Wow.
The secondary aircraft that went straight to Mecca still has some hours left on it. So at the end of Ramadan, they'll load all those people back up and then take them back to their home countries. And whatever the final stop is, they just leave it there to be scrapped by the locals in the same way. That's what they do. Every year, they just go to some different place in the world where they can find some hoopty of an aircraft that barely works just so they can use it for that specific purpose. And then it's left to waste away in whatever its final destination is. And that, to me, like the open flames in the back of the aircraft and, you know, live animals just blew my mind.
No kidding.
Holy cow. So that's one story. There was one other one that I recall very well. It was these very rich kids, and they came to the boneyard, and they said, "We want to buy an aircraft." And they're like, "Great, good story. Like, how are you gonna get it out of here? None of you are air crew, none of your pilots, none of your certified maintainers." They're like, "We'll pay you to ship it. A whole aircraft?" Yeah. Like, well, we're gonna have to break it apart in several pieces. That's fine. We'll figure it out. We'll pay you to break it apart, ship it, and then sort of put it back together for us. What they were doing was they were taking it to Burning Man, and they were making it their hotel resort home for Burning Man while that festival was going on.
Wow.
So it's still sitting out there to this day. Like, they got there and they couldn't get it out. So it's just now sitting out in whatever, I think it's the middle of a lake bed or something. I don't know that much about Burning Man, but that fuselage wings, that aircraft is sitting out there in the middle of nowhere.
Jeebus.
From Burning Man. Like, so she said, you got enough money? And she goes, I can get permits for anything. And I'm sure she's got a whole bunch more stories, but I'd love to get her on here and just regale us for a while about her experiences.
No kidding. I mean, picture that, man. Like, what a business model. Like, hey, let me just go to a graveyard, so to speak, like an airplane graveyard. Pick one that's in decent enough shape that we can hodgepodge this to fly. And then when it's done, we just ditch it in the middle of the desert or wherever we're at and just kind of call it good. What?
I mean, right, yeah. That's it.
That's, you know what that reminds me of, man? If anyone's out there has ever seen the movie Hotel Transylvania, where, like, it's a bunch of gremlins flying an airplane, and this thing, it looks like it's flying on hopes and dreams, you know? That's how broken down this plane is. And their means of landing is, like, literally just crashing this thing. And they're like, well, thanks for flying with us. I'm like, this was flying? It's like falling with style, really. That's really falling what it was. Falling
with style, yeah. I think they had a parachute strapped to the back just in case.
Yeah. And they're serving snacks and everything. This plane's just sputtering along. Like, it looks like some broken down Model T, but it's in the air and whatnot. I'm like, I can't believe that's a thing. I mean, good on you, but I can't believe that's a thing. And especially when you said with the animals, like, I thought my graveyard story was weird, but this takes the cake. And it's kind of like Mythbusters, like, can we make it fly or something like that? I'm like, I guess we can. But
then, I'm like, what kind of paperwork do they have to sign that basically absolves the boneyard, the FAA, the anybody who's ever laid hands on that aircraft at any point during its lifetime? It absolves them from all responsibility should something go south.
No kidding.
And and she said it's all she said was thick.
It's thick.
It's a thick stack of paperwork. And I was like, I would imagine so.
I hope your paycheck is thick too. You know?
Yeah. You know, what's so funny is, like, again, she met my friend and she's like, all right, well, I'm going to, you know, move to wherever you're at. And so, she's like, you know, what do you do for a living? Oh, I work in aerospace. Cool. I'll get a job in aerospace. And then that's been like her, like, what a wild, like, any day, every day is something different. Like, you want to talk about the epitome of every day is something different. That job sounds like it. There's just never a dull moment. And I'm sure it's rife with its own headaches and heartache and whatever else. But my God, the people you must meet.
No kidding. I'm still mind blown of that. Like, imagine, like, the business model behind that. And then say, like you said, like, yeah, the paperwork absolves you, but imagine the amount of money you would have to have in your pocket in case something did go wrong, right? Like a landing gear tire falls off into somebody's roof or something like that. You know, like, let's talk something simple, right? Like, things that normally would fall off on a plane, like, what is, say, like, again, like, if a tire fell off from a commercial airliner, they're just like, whatever, here's your $50,000, go about your ways. But if it's like one of these type of planes where You have to get all sorts of permits and release of liability. And if something falls off or breaks or whatever, I'm like, what's the rundown cost for that, right? And this also kind of reminds me of this one interview we did with Vertical Magazine, where we're talking about buying aftermarket parts. A lot of times some people will go to a graveyard and just snatch it from whatever one that's in a decent enough shape to kind of refurbish. Like, it's one of those things that you really got to be careful what you're messing around with, especially if you're taking stuff from a scrapyard, because who knows how long that's been there. Thankfully for MVP and myself, like, most of the stuff we rob from a scrapyard is stuff that's not going to actually fly. It's just meant to fill gaps or take up space. Like,
well, yeah, I mean, think about like the paperwork alone that this young lady has to deal with just in logbooks from the aircraft sitting out there, because they have to keep track of all the logbooks. So when things still get canned off of those, they go and update the logbooks to say that that part's removed, and then they update a database. So when somebody comes in and says, hey, I need this, they have an in-depth system and saying, okay, row G, aircraft 72 has four engines, and three of those engines had this fuel control pulled off of number four, still has it. So we can go there and get that one, but it's only got this kind of time left on it, or did have, or whatever. But hey, but it's been sitting so long, the O-rings are dried, so you're going to have to get it rebuilt. So then you get, okay, the removal paperwork, then the sign the liability scrap, I'm air quoting scrap paperwork, you know, and then all the shipping information, and oh my gosh.
Yeah. That's a lot. That is a lot. I'm thinking about it too. And then going back to the example of like, you just ditch it in the desert once you're finished with it. Like, how do you report that? You just report it as a loss, you know, or, well, it's not in the US, we could care less. Right. Or wherever.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. Like, once you get it not over U.S. soil, it's like you kind of wash your hands of it. Like, not my pig, not my farm.
Yeah.
And then whatever the host country is like, look, we really don't want to use the nice aircraft for this. So just find something that flies.
Right. It has to be, man. I paperwork alone, I can just imagine, as you mentioned, like cheese and rice, man. And again, going back to like, say, like, you know, owners trying to find parts from a scrapyard, where they'd be to fly it or to just kind of restore it to showroom quality, so to speak. That's a hard find, man. Like, I mean, I've done it for cars and maybe some planes, but never to the point where like I have to like make it showroom quality. And in most cases, it's one of those, like, it's a veneer, you know what I mean? Like, it looks okay from far away, but don't come any closer.
Yeah, good from afar, but far from good.
Yes, exactly. Right. Or yeah. We put like this veneer on it where it looks like it's supposed to be okay, but as soon as you start peeling off the paint, you can tell it's all gilded and trashy.
Well, she was even saying like some of the, when they fly these things out of here, half the instrument cluster doesn't work. So what they do is they bring their own little mount, they set their cell phone in it that keeps all the, you know, GPS stuff and everything else, and they fly them VFR everywhere they have to go.
Wow.
Because they're not going to put the money into them to make them IFR certed again. They just need to get them there. So they just day hop until they get to wherever their destination is.
That's insane.
Using that. But I remember being in Afghanistan and this Russian Antonovs would fly in bringing cargo, you know, different cargo or whatever like that to the airfield. And I remember going up in one of them once, and the GPS system literally legit was a cell phone duct taped to the HUD.
What?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's the Russians, man. They're wild, wild people. They still were cowboying it a little bit.
I mean, cutting costs for sure.
But then you go, man, I can't believe they're doing that. But every week after week, they'd fly in there the same way and fly out, you know?
Cheese and rice. You know, I get this. This is flashing back to every single cartoon I've ever seen where, you know, like this airplane is just hanging on by a thread, you know, and it's flying in on hopes and dreams. You know, like you laugh about it because you think like, oh, this will never happen. Like this is too cartoonish to be real. And then after hearing some of these stories, like, oh, this really does happen. I'm like, what? I mean,
yeah. Yeah, that's where you know, like, oh, they actually did have material for which they built a cartoon on.
Right? It's not just like just some random thought. It
was an original thought, yeah.
You know, like, oh, this would be hilarious. Like, nope, this really happens. That's
like,
that's
like you see in the old Mickey Mouse cartoons where the car tire has like a patch legit sewn onto it.
Yeah.
Or you see the aircraft with a patch, like a square patch sewn onto it. Like yeah, that kind of stuff. Like that was real.
Right. Band-aids and all, man. I'm like, when they weren't kidding when they said it's really held together by band-aids. I'm like, whoa. I mean, to be fair, we've seen aircraft, man, that have been so beat up that you never want to wash them because that's, you know, the caked on dirt and grime is what's really gluing it together. And then once you wash
it, held it together and kept all the fluids inside.
Yeah. And then once you wash it and, you know, actually try to clean it up, then it just falls to pieces because you just broke off that protective layer that's keeping everything in.
Or some of them be like, wow, there's a lot of oil and fuel on the ground underneath this thing. Well, that means it's still got some in it then.
Yep.
Like, what do you mean? Like, well, if it was dry under here, I'd be concerned. Why would you be concerned if it was dry? It means there's no fluid left inside the thing. You know, we ran out.
Yes. Oh my God. That is, it's like a Mater, but it's an airplane. That'd be freaking, that'd be terrible. Please don't do that. Please don't do that. Again, there's a reason why these type of planes have that release of liability. And I'm pretty sure like the average person is not rich enough to be able to manage a business model like that. And then likewise with those ones who take it to Burning Man as their own portable Airbnb, so to speak. I'd imagine you would have to have a crap ton of money just to do that and then just ditch it in the middle of a lake bed or something. Insanity, just flat out insanity. But I definitely would want to bring that person on and someone of similar story, or at least hear some listeners with similar stories so we can actually regale this with our opinions. Like, how is this even a thing going on right now? It's like finding a dodo bird in middle of nowhere. Like, these things are still alive.
I guess one of the most interesting things was, like, you know, of all the different realms of aviation that I've been involved with over the years, never a boneyard. And I never think of a boneyard anything beyond just that, of just a bunch of old, dirty, decrepit aircraft sitting in the middle of a desert somewhere, wasting away.
Right.
And you know, and you don't think like, people actually work over there. And that's not not being derogatory in any way, but it's just like, I never think of that. It never crosses my mind. But there are people over there working their butts off day in and day out, cannibalizing parts, peeling the skins off to go put on a still flying aircraft, scanning your competitors' designs to see if you can improve your own, or buying a hoopty to take your friends to the show, you know?
Like, yeah. That's insane, man. Like, again, like this kind of stuff, man, like you said it best, like, I never would have guessed. Never in my life. Especially for something like you said, like a scrapyard or boneyard. Like,
well, the fact that those ferries permits like that can be cut, to me, it would just be like instant denial. Like, yes. The FAA would just say, no, no, no. But they exist and they can be done and they are done. You know, like that to me, like that the people work there, the stories come out are wild. But the fact that the permits can be cut for those things to happen is, I mean, you know, different, kind of a little bit of a different perspective, you know, you have for the FAA. You kind of think of these hard-nosed drill sergeants that are 100% by the book. But when it comes to that, you're like, ah, there's the old 1920s wing walker FAA coming around you.
Right. It's like, ah, man, it's fine. As long as it doesn't break here, we're okay. And I'm sure every civil authority is like that in some regard, right? Like, well, if it's here, you know, you have to follow rules and stuff. But once you cross this line, whatever. right?
Yeah, I mean, once you're more than 20 miles off the coast of the Atlantic or the Pacific, or south of the Texas border, we no longer care.
Right. I mean, in hindsight, that's terrible, right? But in the same sense, right? Like, if you're required to be accountable for something, once it crosses out of your jurisdiction, like, well, it's kind of on you at that point. So,
I mean, look at your car when you buy it from the dealer. It loses half its value the minute those front tires go from the parking lot to the street.
This is true.
You could get T-bone right there, and the dealer's like, man, that sucks for you. We can sell you another one at full price. You know?
Yeah. Sucks to suck, nerd. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Oh, man. But this is definitely an eye-opener, and it's definitely something I want to explore with people of similar stories, because like I said, mine was maybe just robbing a floorboard from a static display and to be used in a museum. But if anyone else out there has some stories like this, please tell us. We love to hear stuff like this. Again, because, you know, it's all part of that learning process, and then it also helps people out there who have to find other means to make their plane fly, right? Because, you know, some OEM parts are either non-existent no more, or they're just really expensive with a really long lead time. And sometimes you got to make your high value flight happen now, not 7 months from now. So anything else you'd like to add for this, MVP, before we turn it over to our listeners?
No, I think I'm good. I'll work on seeing if we can secure that young lady as a guest. And, you know, as poorly as I told her stories, I'm sure they'd be even funnier and more wild coming from the source.
Yes, most definitely. And again, for everyone out there, if you have some stories like this or similar to what we just recollected from a previous friend, let us know. Let us know in the comments, let us know on our social medias or emails, whichever way is the absolute easiest for you. The best way to have conversations like this with us is through our Discord channel via Patreon. Again, like, this kind of stuff just blows my mind. The fact that it exists at all is making my head explode. But if this happens on the reg, or if you've seen stuff like this happen, please let us know. And again, this is all part of our learning process, and stuff that we can disseminate for everyone else to be aware of, so to speak. And at the very end, it's a very good laugh. I'm telling you, like, I'm trying to really bite my lip on this. I'm just trying to keep myself from laughing because I can't believe this happens. So please reach out to us. On that note, hey, we appreciate you again for listening, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
We would like to take this time to thank our patrons for supporting our show and allowing us to make episodes, maintain our gear, and create merch for all of our listeners. With special thanks to Erica Lamont, Chris Hawkins, Eric Shaw, Dan Schubert, Ryan Frushauer, Kyle Keir, Mike Sherwood, Caleb Stockhill, and Jennifer Brofer. Thank you all so much for your support and patronage. If you like our show, please support us on Patreon. You'll receive awesome perks like access to our private Discord, discounts and early access to our merch, first glimpse of our comics and other projects, and so much more. You can further support us and show off your prowess as an aircraft specialist by visiting our shop at councilformaintenance.com. If you like classy or rugged watches, visit our affiliate Rockwell Time at rockwelltime.com. Use the code CX, the number 4MX, to save 10% off your total order. If you have suggestions for the show, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, send us a line on our contact us section at councilformaintenance.com, and we'll do what we can to get both your ideas and yourself on the show. Please support us on social media, like Facebook at Council for Maintenance, Instagram at CANX for Maintenance Podcast, or Twitter at CXMX Podcast. Please check out our new comic series on the Tapas app. Like, share, subscribe, and comment on our comics. Let us know what you think. Thank you all so much for your support and listenership, and we will catch you all next time.